Hi, this is John Schlitt, and you're listening to Wild Man and Steve. Yep, Wild Man and Steve.
You are about to listen to the intersection of faith, talk, and music. The Wild Man and Steve Show starts right now.
All right, Steve, the opening for the show tonight, this is going to be amazing because what's going to happen is, as you know, all of these are never planned anyway, but especially putting you on the spot here, okay?
You do seem to enjoy that.
Yes, I'm going to put you on the spot. Here it goes. Here we go, okay? Don't want to take too much time. Here we go. I'm going to list for you what is currently trending on Twitter. And when I say the words of what is trending, like I'll say top trend is this, tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. Our listeners.
Little word association. Got
yes.
it.
Yes. Okay. There we go. Ready?
Okay. Yeah, thank go. You. Go. I'm with you.
The Latin teacher to give a label to it. I appreciate that. Yes. Word association with Latin teacher, rock and metal enthusiast, Steve Perkins. Here we go. Ranking at number one, Portfolio Day.
Artist.
Prime Day.
Prime Rib.
M-U-N-L-I-V.
M-U-N-L-I-V.
Yes.
Munliv. Yes, municipal liver. I don't know. I've got nothing.
Tuesday Vibe.
Tuesday Vibe. Ruby Tuesday.
Unfold the Universe.
The science fiction novel Dune.
Jill Biden.
Someone I have met.
Wordle 388X.
Games that waste my time.
Daily Wordle 169.
More games that waste my time.
Coolibali.
Something I don't understand, which tells me it's something that you would say.
Tiger.
Pantang.
And finally, Muhammad Ali.
The greatest.
There you go. So, ladies and gentlemen, that was a unique opening. It wasn't the same type of opening. It wasn't one that I insulted him on or destroyed him or destroyed his character. I just wanted him to finally speak for himself, and you all heard it. So if you could just go now to hashtag Wildman and Steve, rank that opening, which... We always get several listeners to rank our openings when I say that, don't we, Steve?
Oh, we do. We get, sevens, viral. Tens of people. Yes, absolutely. Right.
Sometimes we might even get like three or four that do it. So
hey. Hello, you've reached the Wild Man and Steve hotline. How may I help you?
Yeah, you got that new Elephant album?
Do you mean the new final edition of John Elefante's amazing new album, The Amazing Grace?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, y'all got that one?
You can pre-order that now at girdermusic.com, sir.
Oh, okay, thanks.
Hello, this is the Wild Man and Steve Hotline. How may I help you?
Yeah, hi, do you know where I could get the Boondock Saints album?
Do you mean the CD and vinyl of Smokin' Hot Blues by Dale Thompson and the Boondogs?
That's it. That's the one. I've looked all over for it.
Sir, you can find that and all great Christian music releases at girdermusic.com.
Fantastic. Thanks, Wild Man.
But I'm not Wild Man. Hello, this is Steve with the Wild Man and Steve Hotline.
Hey there, there's this song, Passover Prophecy, by K.
chaotic resemblance. It's been tearing up the charts. You know anything about the rest of that album? Is the whole thing that hard and heavy?
Well, girdermusic.com says it rocks with a bludgeoning vow of dedication.
That's for me, man. Can I order it from Girder Music?
Yes, sir. Just go to girdermusic.com and you can find Nazarites by Chaotic Resemblance, Zealots in the Land of Nod by Monstrous, albums by Brazilian power metal band Dynasty, and more, along with all your classic Christian rock favorites.
Hey, thanks, brother. Hey, be sure to tell Steve I said hi.
But I am Steve.
Hey, Steve, something wrong?
It's just that everyone seems to think I'm you.
Seems like a compliment to me.
Fine. You man the hotline for a while. I'm going to go check out all the great new releases at girdermusic.com.
So, ladies and gentlemen, as our listeners, you all know what is coming next. So now I am going to turn it over to Mr. Segway, Steve Perkins, rock and metal enthusiast, who always does a tremendous segue for our amazing guests. And we do have an amazing guest with us today.
And of course, I never know who our guest is going to be. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But I had an idea, Wildman. You know that I am such a Whitesnake fan. And also been a big Striper fan. And I thought, wow, wouldn't it be really cool if you could take the sound of a couple bands like that, those two, maybe even those two bands in particular, bring them together. I think that would just be like the glorious White Stripes. Glorious White Stripes. I think that's what that sort of sound would be.
Glorious White
Stripes. Glorious White Stripes. Yes. Don't you think it would be a great band?
I don't understand why these bands don't hire you as their marketing agent with that.
I mean, I really don't either.
That was just off the charts. The Glorious White Stripes. Yeah.
Yes.
Now, my only question would be, who would be the singer for such a band like that? Who would be the
singer? I'll say this. I think you'd have to have somebody with just an iconic voice. Okay, somebody whose voice just captures the essence of classic hard rock from the 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, somebody with an iconic voice. I think it would have to be somebody from Great Britain, because we know that all the great bands of that era were from Britain, right? Right, Purple, Zeppelin, Sabbath, right? All the boys, Whitesnake, yeah. Yeah, so I think you'd have to have a Brit with an iconic voice.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was it again? The Glorious White...
Glorious White Stripes, yes.
Glorious White Stripes. Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Steve has done it again, Mr. Segway, because on the show with us today is Mr. Nathan James, vocalist and frontman for Inglorious, and now with Iconic. Mr. James, welcome to the program. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for talking to me. And I love that name idea. I don't know why we didn't think of it ourselves, Steve.
Oh, man. We
could see that on a t-shirt, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There'll be some bootleg merchandise for you guys. Oh, man. I got to tell you, we are so excited. And when I say we, and we've talked on our show before, in a lot of ways, we kind of represent all the fans who don't get to talk to their artists and the ones that they love. So we are kind of like that tip of the iceberg representing the fandom that is out there. And I tell you for a fact, our level of excitement is representing the level of excitement of so many people right now around the world. And people that I've talked to, I think people that Wildman has talked to, this new album of yours is extraordinary. I think for some people, it's probably introduced them to you, has introduced them to your work with Inglorious. Maybe he's introduced some people to, who knows, introduced some people to Whitesnake and Striper as well. But so we've got a lot to talk about. And just want to echo thank you for being on the show. And we're really excited to jump into this.
No problem. Thank you. I'm super excited about it as well. I always say that I'm a fan first, you know, so I'm a fan of these bands and these people that I'm working with. I'm not trying to be cool about it, you know, like I'm still in awe of every single one of those guys. So yeah, it's a real honor and I'm so glad people are liking it.
So Nathan, first of all, our listeners are always interested when we have guests on about their history. And so could you talk a little bit about what got your start in music in the first place?
I discovered I had a voice when I was about 11 years old, and my headmaster in school heard me sing, and he put me forward for a singing competition, which I won, and I got to perform with an orchestra in front of 1500 people when I was 11. And literally from that moment on, my life changed. When I watch the video, you can see the second I fall in love with it. Like, I fell in love with everything about it. Just the lights, the sound, the loudness, everything about it. Performing, I love performing. And from then on, I started training professionally. I was then in some choirs, so I was a chorister, and then went to stage school, did some theater, kept training my voice, and then I started gigging when I was about 16, then worked through the working men's clubs, which is kind of similar to what David did, actually. David Coverdale started off in that kind of club world.
Right.
And then, just started getting gigs, going on tours. I was in a show called Route 66, a show about American rock music, and we celebrated all the great American bands. We fronted all the Harley Davidson festivals in Europe. So we did this huge, great big... I've kind of literally since school been gigging and touring. So in various things. I've then made an appearance on a television show in the UK when I was about 10 years ago now, and did quite well. It was an Andrew Lloyd Webber TV show. He was looking for Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar. That obviously caught my attention because the role of Jesus is an amazing sing, you know? Like, wow. On the original album, as the fans will know, it was Ian Gillan, who's one of my heroes. So,
sure.
So it made sense for me to audition for that. I didn't win, but as a result of that, then I joined the amazing Trans-Siberian Orchestra, who flew me out to America, spent 3 years with TSO, headlined Varken with TSO. And then while this was all going on, I started up my own band, Inglorious. Inglorious got nice and busy. We've released four original albums, one covers album, one live album. And yeah, we've played Download, Main Stage, Donington. We've done some amazing things. So yeah, super lucky. But always been in the business, always sung for my supper. And yeah, I loved singing is what I fell in love with. And then when I was about 14 years old, I discovered Queen, I discovered Freddie Mercury, and that just blew me away. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I wanted to push my voice. I wanted to sing higher and higher and higher, you know, like Freddie. Yeah. It just has an endless range. I think there's a danger in rock singing, which is what makes it exciting to listen to, is that us guys are pushing our voices to the extreme. And that's what makes it exciting to listen to. Salvation.
So it's coming up through school with the music that way, you know, we've talked to artists whose families, especially their parents, were musical families, really supportive of what they did. We've talked with artists from non-musical families whose families really didn't get what they were doing or maybe support them that much. What was that like for you with your family? Were they supportive of you going the musical route?
They were very supportive. They had no idea what to do. Like, they just kind of, none of them are musical. And that's like generations. Like, I've looked back. No, there's no one musical, not a cousin is musical. No one even plays an instrument. So it is quite a phenomenon, I suppose, in our family. But they were super supportive and they knew I really wanted to do it. And also they were told that I was good when I was a kid. And I think having someone else tell them made them go, ah, so maybe this isn't a waste of time. You know, like, and also money, right? Because I didn't come from a particularly wealthy family. My family of working class family. And for them to afford things like singing lessons, which even, God, how many years ago? I've been having singing lessons for 18 years. So when I was like 14, 15, a £40 singing lesson, that's like what, 60 odd bucks an hour or something, 20 years ago? It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money to pay on some kid who could give it up next week, you know? Like, I could have been like, oh, I hate this. No, not for me. So they knew I wanted to do it and they were very supportive. And even though they didn't have a lot of money, they made sure that we didn't go without it. And it's paid off now, you know, like it's paid off now, well, but at the time, you know, it's a big bet, right? It's a big gamble. It's like, it's like horse riding. It's like one of those really expensive hobbies, you know?
Yeah. Well, and given the style of music that you are inspired by and that you're obviously really breathing new life into, bringing to a new generation, if you will, all those guys were working class guys. And so for you to honestly come from a similar background, I mean, I don't know if it would have worked had you been born with a silver spoon in your mouth to be able to carry the freight of, you know, Ozzy, Ian Gillan, Robert Plant, David Coverdale in that part of the rock and roll family tree. Now, those were all working class guys. So that really works.
I think it's something to do, like everyone that you just said is a, Barzy is a blues singer, right? It's the blues mentality. It's the, if you've never struggled, if you've not been around struggle, you can't really sing about it.
Right.
I've watched my parents work their whole lives. My mum worked nights and had five children, you know, just so she could be with us. So I know what real life is. So I can therefore sing about it sincerely and authentically, which is super important to me.
Well, that's what I think people relate to. I think that's why people relate to pure blues. I think that's why people relate to the classic rock, which is blues rock. I think people relate to that because, hey, these are stories similar to mine, right? And it's authentic. It's real. That's why people dig it.
Definitely.
And that's one of the things I appreciate about Inglourious as well. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that for the most part, there's always an explanation from you or whoever wrote the song of why the song was written.
Lyrically.
Yeah, lyrically, exactly. Like I know there's one in particular you were talking about a relationship that was broke up, and that you wrote it out. You even used the word anger. You said you wrote it out of anger. Talk to us about what that's like. Yeah.
I wrote that about anger at myself, you know, so that one was me confessing my mistakes and me holding my hand up and saying, I effed up. I find inspiration from the characters in my life and not usually from my situation, if I'm being honest. So that was quite a different song for me because it was very personal. I have a very rich life in that I'm surrounded by big characters. I come from a family of very opinionated people who have always got something to say. So there's always going to be friction within that, you know, like within their own marriages or within their own family circles or friendship circles. I'm surrounded by, and I'm surrounded by musicians. I've not had a job that's not been in music since I was 16. So I've grown up around all these interesting people. And when I'm writing, I find it quite therapeutic to write about them. I don't know. I feel like a dude on the train who's like drawing someone. Do you know what I mean? They don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm like just watching and like trying to work them out, work out what their story is, and then I like to try and put it into a song. Yeah, I'm not really one for writing from my own personal projection. But also, most recently, on the last couple of albums, I've been trying to write about. I loved history at school, so I was writing about interesting historical characters. You know, so we've got there's a song on our new album, We Will Ride album, called We Will Ride, the title track, and it's about. I found it really odd that. History in the UK, we only talked about highwaymen. So like these men that would, do you know what I mean? Like take, steal and kill people on the way to London. And Dick Turpin was a famous one who I actually lived in the same village as where he was supposed to be based. So like that was quite good connection. Jimmy Page actually also lives in that village. It's a really crazy little place it's an amazing place. But I was fascinated that they were only men. And then I found this one article about a woman who was the only kind of notable highway woman called Lady Catherine. And she lost her family's fortune and took to killing people and mugging them on the way to London. And I just found her fascinating. So I wrote a whole song about her and about... I really got into like investigating her. There was a couple of movies out about her. I watched the movies. I tried to learn about her character, and therefore, so I could give it a good representation when I came to writing it. And it definitely shows. It's got a really eerie feeling about it. You know?
It seems that it's natural for you. Have there been challenges along the way, as far as like what are your challenges in writing, or does it just always just because it? What we're hearing is tremendous and it's amazing. And hearing you talk like that, you just get an idea and you go from that. Is it natural, challenging? Describe that process.
It's so weird. It's like it was a light bulb moment in my life. So when I got my management like about 8-9 years ago, they said, okay, we're going to introduce you to this guy. His name's Derek Shulman. Derek Shulman of the band Gentle Giant. He's a legend in music. He signed John Bon Jovi in the 80s. He signed, re-signed AC/DC. He was a big label legend. And he was going to A&R me. So we had a meeting in London and he said, so... Love your voice, amazing voice. And I just recorded these demos that some friends wrote, the bass player from Queen currently wrote. And I sent him the demos and I was like, here are the demos. And he said, okay, these are great, but I only like two of the songs. And there was 10 songs. Yeah. And I was like, ah. And he was like, did you write any of these? And I said, no. He's like, have you ever written before? And I said, no, in the meeting. And he was a bit like shocked and taken aback. And then he said, you need to write. He was like, you have to have something to say. And I was terrified. Up until this point, I'd only sung for people. I'd put my voice into someone's song. So I'd just at this point done two albums with Uli John Roth where I was singing the old Scorpions stuff, you know? So I did the Scorpions, or I did Trans-Siberian Orchestra where I was singing Paul O'Neill's music, or I did Thriller Live, the Michael Jackson tour, where I was singing Michael's, or whatever it was, I always fit my voice into someone's song. And now he was saying I had to write, and I was terrified. So got in a room for my first writing session ever. I remember it so well because I was so nervous. I was worried, I was embarrassed of what was going to come out, if it was going to suck. And we sat down and I wrote the chorus lyrics to a melody that we were writing in this little group we were writing with. And the song is called Unaware, and it became our most played single on UK radio in the UK from our first album. Yeah. And I remember thinking, wow, I might be okay at this. I generally, until that moment, I had no idea if I could write, if it was good. I heard the melody in my head and I was like, okay, let's see what. And I wrote that about, there was a really lovely guy at school who, it sounds so morbid, I'm so sorry. He suffered severely with his mental health and he hung himself, and he was just the most beautiful person. He was in a band at school, really attractive dude, had like a really great friendship circle, and it was kind of about him. And from then on, I was like, oh, okay, I don't know if I can always write things that are that meaningful, because it really takes it out of you when you're writing something like that. Like, it's very intense to go through that kind of trauma. And then I wrote the rest of the album, all the lyrics on the album, and it did really well. And I remember thinking, okay, I enjoy this. I was terrified of it, and then I now really love it, so much so that I write with other people for other projects. And I've started almost like producing a couple of things with other bands, that because I now get off on that as much as I did just the singing.
With artists who, as they start to explore their craft, they don't just stay in one lane, whether it's as a guitarist or a singer, but they just naturally want to branch out and to get into some of the other things. I've got to share with you we've got to move on to the new album here. I really want to get into the Iconic stuff. But you're talking about singing other people's material. So after Iconic came out, I was texting a friend of both Wild Man's and mine, a fellow named Paul Bradakis. And I emailed or texted Paul and I said, you can thank me for this later. And I sent him Medusa and the Joan Jett song, I Hate Myself for Loving You. So I said, you can thank me for this later. And I sent him both of those. Paul texted me back and he says, excellent, love the singer. They definitely do that second song, meaning the Joan Jett song, better than Joan Jett ever did. So those are just out at such great, great tracks. So let's get into Iconic here. And let's just come right off of what we were talking about with the songwriting. What was your involvement with the songwriting, both in terms of the music, in terms of the lyrics? Obviously, Michael Sweet does all the writing of the lyrics for Striper. I think he does most of them when he did with Sweet Lynch. Not sure. I think it was a collaborative thing when he did the Sun Bomb thing with Tracy Guns. So you kind of, how did the songwriting go with this album?
Well, mostly it was all just brought to me. So Alessandro and Michael did the majority of the lyrics and the melodies, and I think Michael pieced together the song out of riffs from Joel. I think that's kind of how it happened. So Joel came in with a bucket load of riffs and was like, okay, here's this, this would be a cool pre-chorus. Michael put it all together. They then wrote top line of melodies and lyrics. And then there was a couple that they didn't write. One of them was a really bluesy shuffle, the only shuffle on the album, which is so Whitesnake, so early Whitesnake, that as soon as I heard the demo, I was like, I really hope I get to write that one. I really wanted to write that one. And I truly believe that I was given that because I kind of am naturally that more bluesy singer, and that it's something that I felt more comfortable than maybe Michael did, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he doesn't do, in fact, he even talked about it in interviews for this album. He didn't really ever do much. He likes the bluesy sound. He had never really done that much. So which song are you referring to?
So it's the final track, Enough of Your Love, which I wrote the lyrics and melody for that track when I got the demo. And as soon as I heard it, I was just like, it's got to be. Have a title with love in as well. It needed that. And sometimes you have to lean into the obvious, right? I think sometimes the more people fight the urge and are so worried about it sounding too much like something else, that's when the quality suffers.
Week, the dynamic duo returns.
Tune in next week for the second half of this interview with Nathan James and the boys Wild Man and Steve.
The Wild Man and Steve show is now partnering with New Release Today. Find out more about them at newreleasetoday.com. And don't forget to check out our website, where you can also leave us a review at wildmanandsteve.com.
Sounds like rock and roll to me.